Welcome, everybody. This is SharePoint Weekly, episode 62.
The invite said 62.
Oh, there, right. There we go.
That is exactly why we have guests on the show, to tell us which episode number it is.
I'll just do the administration piece here.
This is the SharePoint Weekly, episode 62. My name is Kevin. I'm a principal program manager from the Microsoft side of the house, and the other host who's always typically here, Valdek. Why are you here?
My name is Valdek Mastigash. I am a head of product at Rancor, and today we have a guest, Brum.
Yes, we do. We're even sitting in the same room, which is quite rare, actually, with our guests.
Correct. Yeah, indeed.
Who are you? What?
Okay,
I'm back.
So I'll just get started then. So my name is Bram de Jager. I'm Office Services and Apps MVP.
Yeah.
I'm working for Delaware Netherlands as a lead architect. And you probably may all know me from being the owner of the SharePoint client browser tool, which has been around for quite a while, actually, already.
Yeah. The SharePoint client browser tool is definitely one of those things where people know that it exists, but they don't necessarily know who's behind it. But it's Bram.
So
if you have any feedback, that's your time. Now, we're going to talk about that one, what it is, in a second as well, for those who are not aware of what it is, because that's super, super helpful tool, which unfortunately works on Windows, though.
Yes, true.
Because it's based on the client-side object model and all of that, but we can talk about that one in a second. Now, Prem, you've been in a SharePoint area for quite a long time. What's your background?
Oh, boy.
And not just in SharePoint or in Office 365 or...
Yeah. So, basically, back in the days, I started out, and I was actually with you, Valdek, or you...
Yeah, we worked together for a week, I think.
As a colleague.
Yes.
True. Started out as a developer within the .NET space back in the days when that basically started. Was it 2001, I think, somewhere? And eventually I started working at a company and I just got a laptop. I got a big box of CDs back in the days. There was the MSDN subscription.
Yep.
And
you got
your CDs with all the different colors based on what you needed to install. And I got a laptop and a book which has Introduction or Admin SharePoint Server 2003 back in those days.
Yep.
So that's how I basically started my consultancy life, and that just evolved along with SharePoint into Office 365 from a developer point of view. And lately, I'm moving way more to a lead architect or a solution architect from that perspective.
Yes. So quite a transition, actually.
Yeah, so a bit less development, which is sad to some extent because I still enjoy it. And that's why I'm keeping the tool up and running, because I can still do something. Although I'm not the best developer, so let's get that out as well. And doing more solution architecture from the perspective, making use of Azure. Yeah,
I think it's quite natural transition because SharePoint 2003 was released in 2002, right?
Yep.
2003, now it's 2019, it's 16 years.
Yeah, ouch, yep.
So a good transition. You're also a MCM?
True, yeah.
So what does that mean for those who don't actually know what is an MCM?
Well, I should probably ask you. So let's start with the abbreviation. MCM is Microsoft Certified Master.
Yeah.
It was a special program during the 2007, 2010, and 2013 time frame. Basically, what it came down to is that the existing training model kind of facilitated in some exams and trainings, which still are around from the perspective, but there wasn't the next level, so the more 400, 500 level training material. So Microsoft came up with this program and getting totally in-depth technical 3-week training in Redmond for a pretty limited set of people, because it wasn't a really cheap program, to be fair, as well.
Yep, I think it was 18,500 to participate, minus all of the invoicing and plus the T&E and all of that, so it sums up to be a big sum.
Yeah, so and that also defined, I guess, the limited amount of people, because,
correct.
Yeah, your company basically had to pay for it, because I wouldn't pay it myself, let's put it that way. So I did the 2010 rotation, and you were a trainer, so that's why my remark I should probably ask you. And together with some other trainers as well, I'm not going to name everybody because there's actually a lot. It's not making any sense. But yeah, really enjoyed it. I was, to give you some idea, basically my day started at 6, getting up. I went to bed at somewhere 12 o'clock. And the only thing what I did is went to the Microsoft building, got in the classroom, did my lessons, did my practices. Once that was done at 6 o'clock, probably get a bite and then get back into the building again and do all of your own lab materials.
Yeah.
And do that for 3 weeks in a row, including the weekends. And then you get two exams, a theoretical exam, and together with a practice exam from that perspective. So that was interesting because I kind of lost sight halfway my theoretical exam because I was just too exhausted. I'm not the only one from that perspective. That's true. Yeah, good program. Learn a lot. Still using it, actually. That's the interesting piece here. Yeah. And the network. Don't forget about that one. So learning all the people, being there.
I think there's like 50, 60 MCMs in the world. Yeah. It wasn't, well, the program had to be stopped because the evolution of the technology was moving so fast that there was no way for us as an instructor to keep the material up to date. So that was just impossible. So, and due to many, many other reasons as well. I think it was suspended back in 2013 or so.
Yeah, I was actually up for my second rotation because I did the 2010 and I was, at that point, I invested already more than half a year of preparations.
Yeah.
And my flights were booked, my hotel was booked, and sadly, I received an email Friday, end of the day, just before the weekend, and I was going off within 2 weeks, basically. I received an email, we're going to stop the program, and that means we're going to stop everything at this point. So that also means the upcoming rotation, which was my rotation, we're going to cancel that as well. Yeah, that was a bit of a bummer, mildly put.
I absolutely agree. Yeah. So we did 18 rotations of that, but that was fun. That was really fun.
But I guess we're kind of a dinosaur at this point.
I think we are. Yeah. Yes, that's true. We're so. Yeah.
The whole MCM abbreviation and the title. It makes sense because it's just stopped. So less and less people actually know about it.
Yeah. But you said that the learnings you still use them. So what are the things which are useful from that kind of a learning or training?
Well, there's one particular sheet which kind of, I don't know how many times I saw that, but it was this quote, know what you know what you don't know, and then the key thing comes in, that is, don't confuse the two. If you're actually being a good consultant, don't just point it out if you don't know exactly, and you can always point out and say, hey, I'll figure it out for you. Yeah. I don't know, but I think this makes sense. But make the explicit distinction between the two.
Yeah.
So don't confuse the two. Know what you don't know, don't confuse the two. It has nothing to do with technique.
True.
Nothing to do with SharePoint. So yeah, that's one of the interesting bits and pieces, I think, from the program. It's sure it is in-depth technical knowledge, but there was way more around it. And it was also about concepts and thinking. True. And to be fair, a lot of the stuff, I remember one particular session or topic where we talked about upgrading, and the trainer went all the way in the details of the sequence of what happens during an upgrade from 2010 to 2013, for instance. It's just the way how they explain it and how that works, and I don't know whether it's still the same at this point.
Yeah,
but I guess
it is actually.
So that's why things are sometimes, because you kind of know what's happening in the background, in the depth, you can have a pretty good estimate as in what's actually happening in the system. You're not sure, but it helps out with troubleshooting, thinking about your solution, ways to how to solve basically the big questions.
And that's something what we should actually think about. How can we bring similar kind of a program, or not necessarily 18,000, not the money part, but from a learnings part, how can we help a younger generation, so to say, which makes us sound really old, but the experience to share that with other people. That's an interesting question.
Well, but I guess the interesting part there is that, as you've said, right, the pace of change is just too high. I mean, by the time you establish, let's say, the recommended way of doing things, things have changed. Like, for example, like the other day, we've seen that Delve blogs are now gone. So by the time you would have best practice around scaling that and tagging information and find that, by the way, they're gone, and now we have to relearn and remap everything to other blogs. It's like, so I wonder if that's a viable thing. And also with all the different things that are available on Azure, like the PaaS part. Like you can build so many things with that, meaning there's less need for your own code, but then you just have to keep track of what the different paths are, what are the offerings, limitations, and how they change and evolve over time.
True. But then there's the other side of the story, which is also the processes and the approaches and the kind of a thinking, which doesn't change. The thinking part doesn't change. It's not about technology.
Yeah, but then there would be Microsoft certified consultant, mass principal consultant.
MCC.
Consulting master. Okay, there we go.
MCCM.
There we go. But on the day-to-day part from you, Brad, what do you actually do then nowadays? So
that's your good question.
You go to events.
Apparently. You're talking this week in your Ben Shepman conference. Yeah, that's why we're sitting on the same room. So
yeah, the unique position. Yeah.
So he's not presenting in this room. But,
no, you know. Luckily not. in Prague indeed. So at the conference. But what I'm normally doing is we kind of believe in the vision of well, you have the digital workplace. That's clearly the vision of Microsoft, and that's moving into this intelligent workplace. The thing what's missing, talking to you, Microsoft in general, is what we believe in is the integrated workplace. And that's actually about, that also has to do with the company I work for. We have two major ecosystems. One is Microsoft, of course. The other one is SAP. That's also one of the big advantages of us. But the interesting bit is, although SAP has a lot of business processes in there, it just doesn't cover all the business processes. And a lot of the stuff is actually happening. It's actually part of a business process, but it's not being picked up by SAP. That's where we start pulling out the data. And we bring that into the Office 365, the digital workspace from that perspective. We mix and match the data depending on what's the business process and what's the business question actually at that point. And then very likely what we do is we put it back in. So one of the examples is SKU management. You basically put it out. You have a SKU for a particular candy, let's say a peppermint. That particular material which is in there just stops because it's not being produced anymore, or is it being changed or something, then that SKU is not valid at that point. But the whole process then to change the SKU and put it back into SAP, that's not being supported by SAP. So that's one of the things what we do when we bring that into the workplace, so Teams potentially, or SharePoint, or Empower Apps, or whatever makes sense of that thing, depending on whether it's a document-related process or more process-related process.
So it's really kind of integrating the business processes and surveying relevant data in the cloud for the employees.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense.
And the key thing here is that it's actually really about focusing on not having to change too much of a context. So you being in Teams, let's make sure we bring the process into Teams because you don't want to switch all the time to a different application, because switching means distraction. Distraction means lowering your efficiency, and it all falls down from there.
Which definitely is one of the directions where we're heading, the Teams being the number one location where people spend 8 hours in a day or whatever, how long they work on a day. So is that something...
You're still working 8 hours a day?
No. My life is not a typical life. I'm a bad candidate of explaining how I spend my time. Anyway, but if you think about the team's vision and the context, lack of context switching or reducing the amount of context switching, that's definitely the way of doing that. What's your take on is it looking like the winner? Is it finally getting there? Because we used to say the same for Outlook as well. We started building digital dashboards in Outlook back in, I can't remember, S1. It's way, way, way many years ago. And then SharePoint came, and now we're saying it's Teams. You can be honest and
transparent. Well, let's put it this way. So the thing which I like, which I really like, is actually, and that also is the dance, because it took me a while to actually get there. Using Teams is something different than actually using Teams and gaining benefit out of it. So it took me a while to figure out, okay, how does chat work? How does calling work?
Yeah.
How does a channel work? And not from the perspective, I can read the manuals which are out there, but actually using it within the context of what I'm doing on a day-to-day event. And the thing which I really like is, because, well, you kind of touched on it, as in, and normally we spend this 8 hour working day, which is then for most of the people 9 to 5, I guess.
Yeah.
So mine is, I have no clue actually when, yeah, formally it starts around 9 and formally it ends around 5. But if that means I'm going to the gym in the middle, I'm okay. And actually my boss is also okay with it. And that also means that I'll probably work in the evening.
Yep.
Or I'm at the gym and I'm getting a call by a colleague saying, hey, I'm just stuck. I need this and this. Yep. And I can just pick up my mobile phone and just continue working from there from that perspective.
Yep.
So that's what I really like. So having that option to kind of then now bringing in those business processes into that same client, which is Teams and then on different devices, that's really starting to make sense from the perspective. But yeah, it's getting there. I think we're probably ahead of the most of the people, yeah, the adoption curve. Because I think I'm just getting it with the team and trying to push people into it. But looking at my customers, geez, there's a long way to go. And it just takes time.
That's not technology, right?
No. It's completely changed my mind. Exactly. Put some wording or some wording on top of it. Yeah.
Exactly. So technology is kind of there, but it's all more on adapting the right ways of working and modernizing the ways of working and all of that.
Yeah.
Just a random example, because we are at the European SharePoint conference. Just a smile moment last week. There was a reminder in Facebook, like when was it, 3-4 years ago, we were in Vienna for the European SharePoint conference. And that was 4 years ago, and we showed how to use a audio transcripts and by audio or talking, we order a modern SharePoint site using Teams in the keynote. And at the time, it was like, holy, wow, that's
cool. Mind-blowing.
And we're still pushing the bot framework and everything else. And it's still, I would say it's catching, but it still hasn't really exploded, the adoption of bot framework and the chat UIs. Is it going to happen? What's your take on the...
I'm just curious whether people are actually really...
Or is it still click-through as a specific application, personal app, or what works?
So, yeah, I'm kind of curious whether people are really ready for bots from that perspective, from a chat point of view. To be clear, the messaging, I mean, chat. We've built this, so leave request, which is going back to that, that's most of the time the whole HR process has been captured in SAP or actually SuccessFactors from that perspective. But how many times per year am I doing a leave request? That's just a couple of times. So, and SuccessFactors is not my natural habitat. So I want to do my leave request within Teams. That's what I'm used to. So what we did, we've built this bot into Teams saying, hey, I want to request a leave request. We're doing all the nice figuring out the intent of the user with Lewis from the perspective. And then eventually what it does, it's going to say, so I think the bot basically starts repeating. I think you want to have 4 days off based from next Friday, which is that particular date, and your balance from a leave perspective is still 10, so 4 days will fit in that. Is that okay? And you type or you click yes, and then the leave request being filed out to SuccessFactors
for
approval, and the approval we also brought into Teams, because that's then an approval channel for your team managers, where they can have an in-context discussion about the actual leave request, which is then the interesting bit here. Because they might want to involve your project manager. He needs to have a say on the approval of the leave request, because his project is depending maybe on that particular resource. So you can have all that conversation
in the same context.
And then eventually with adaptive cards, you can do either approve or reject. The interesting piece here is, I'm just not sure whether companies are ready for this.
Well, but I mean, so that is actually part, right? I request a time off just the other week. And I mean, all the things you said, like intent typing, I can go just to a website. I can see immediately on a screen so many hours, something like click, like fill in form with one field, like from this to then done. There is like doing the same thing with going to Teams, open file, finding the right bot from the list of 20 bots, if you have them, and then engaging it in a way that it gets me. Like it seems so much more efficient to just go to a web app designed for that with two entry fields done.
Correct. That's what you would get if you have a proper nice web application. So try SuccessFactors for one time.
Or
besides that, can you do that from a mobile application? Because that's where such with SuccessFactors, it's just not mobile ready.
Yeah, but I mean, so that's
when I'm talking my leave request with my wife, for instance. That's not during working hours. Sure. That's during the weekend. And I'm thinking, oh, why don't we get a weekend off next week? Yeah, that's right. I'll file a leave request now on my mobile. That's
true. Yeah.
I want to do that in Teams because that's where I'm just used to. So, but like we just said, I agree with that.
I'm not saying. I think that there is, like, if I imagine that in the end everything would land on Teams, so Teams becomes the overloaded entry to everything, but it's everything in it, and then you need to find among the 20 million things you can do with that. Because does it also have expenses? Does it also have leave? Does it also have complaints, compliance training, everything?
Yeah.
So then you will be like, okay, so I want to do that. And then you will start talking to something that they will then try to figure out, like, so what do you need exactly? Right. And then I wonder if it will get really efficient. Maybe it will become to the point where you will have a voice assistant on your desk, assuming you're not working in an open plan office.
Yep.
And then you're like, you're requesting free, and my assistant thinks that I am requesting free, but it's you sitting next to me. And then, you know, all kinds of things. And maybe at that point, when you can really talk to it as opposed to type as if you were talking, maybe then it becomes really efficient. Because otherwise, it seems like there's a lot of keystrokes for something that you can just fill in two fields and you're done. Assuming, of course, that you have that interface and you have that way to work on mobile and everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. In the short term, I absolutely understand the fact that we are getting housekeeping, apparently, is trying to get it.
We have another guest. So we have another guest. And this is exciting because that's a person that we haven't invited.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Ooh, he's getting nice.
Join us.
what's the word for that one?
Bathrobe.
Yeah, it is actually.
And,
yeah.
And flippers. So.
Ah, nice. Maybe you should wear them during the.
what did you order?
I don't know.
Bathrobe? Bathrobe and slippers.
Okay. Anyway.
I mean, they would like you to feel at home, basically.
Sure.
Well, yeah. What are the odds that there is something listening around your room and felt like, you know, that guy sounds stressed. We need to get him some bathrobe and slippers to relax because your heart rate goes up.
It's the case indeed. Now, where were we?
We're
talking about the UI design.
Yeah, and moving to those bots, which is basically, I guess, to the Alexas and all the other Cortanas and all the other speakers, which are basically there on your desk, in your home, in the office.
Yeah,
that's more natural.
True. True.
We're talking for a very long. It makes sense to do that.
There's still the massive language barrier. So English is quite well understood by those boxes, but Finnish.
You're like, well, but I mean, imagine even typing with a bot or like talking to a bot in Finnish. Like you would be like if I look at these words, like they are that long, always. It's like it's a lot of typing for a thing that you can just click, next, done.
To be fair, this was a situation 4 years ago. Obviously, in keynotes, when I do keynotes, I'm coming back on the Vienna keynote, we ordered basically the keynote script went something like, can you give me a new site collection? And then that one, the audio could actually recognize, and it actually sent that properly. But then, I think it was something like, and Paolo is here as well. But when you try to say Paolo to a Teams, there was no way for that to understand that it's actually Paolo, not whatever the
other. Paolo, Well, so but I mean,
that's why we did some of the stuff writing, some of the stuff saying.
But then imagine, right? So imagine that at some point you're asking it for a site, your session expired, and then instead it's asking you, so what are credentials? And you're okay, admin, pound, dollar, lowercase r, exclamation mark, semicolon, zero. And you're like going with that. I was like, that's not really efficient, is it?
Well, I think that's one of the things where I think things start falling down. And I agree. Yeah. Going back to the question which you said, so where is Teams in this? I think it's slowly, getting there is probably not the right word, but that's what this comes down to. And that's going to mean small steps, and we'll learn along the way with each of the steps. And that's also why just start building apps with bots and you need some experience. And that similarly is applicable to all the AI stuff, which is currently happening. Yeah. Start small. That's the key thing here. Just try to build something small, get it in somewhere to gain some experience, and then see how that works. Because eventually, we'll get there. Eventually, we'll get to what Waldeck pointed out with those speakers there on your desk on during your working hours in an office. At home, it's already happening.
Sure.
Quite often see that during in the consumption market, the home market, that's kind of a way ahead of these things. But eventually, they'll get into the business market too. Yeah.
And maybe there's also this thing that maybe it's not going to be for us, man, but maybe it's going to be for our kids. Like the other day, I read an article about a kid of, I don't know, 4 years old, and she would be in supermarket and she would assume that Alexa is there and she would ask stuff. Because kids are like that, right? I mean, because they grow up with that, it's to them, it's natural. Like they don't imagine friends anymore. They have imaginary friends now in real, right? They to which they can talk and they respond back, but then they are outside and they just naturally talk and nothing's happening.
So, I mean, it's a natural evolution. Simple example is that nobody is live TV
anymore. No, true.
That,
yeah.
But if you would have explained for our parents that this live TV thingy, this is going to go away. So nobody's going to use live TV. So, well, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Teletext, that is the thing, right?
Or faxes or whatever. So.
Well, the whole, we probably know all those movies which are on the internet about mobile phones and that they go out to people and explain to them back in the days when the mobile phone wasn't there yet. Yeah. What did that tell you? Why don't I just go home and have a call? And if I'm not home, then I'm not home. So that's no problem. If people that's no problem.
So back in 99, because we're sort of a bit old, and that's terrifying.
We're slowly getting towards the point that I'm going to ask you how old you are and how many years you're already working out.
So. We're coming back on the natural evolution. This is also coming on the teams and actually going with the bots and everything else. So you need to get to a certain level. You understand, you get more ideas and innovation. Now I get, this works like that. And then you get another idea. Back in... what was it? 97. I was studying computer science, and there was a WAP, W-A-P. So WAP, and it was the green Nokia phone, 7110. And ICL, actually, there was a school project where we created a bookshop for ICL using the WAP, WAP and V-W-M-L. A language.
Yeah.
Written in ASP, not ASP.NET, but with ASP at the time, because ASP.NET didn't exist. And that was the way I actually got employed by ICL, because I was the technical lead on writing it. but I still remember the fact that we got a Nokia 7110, and then we were writing that and making sure that it's somehow working. It wasn't really a functional store, but you could do a demo out of it. And you're like, why would you buy books from the mobile phone? It doesn't make any sense. But sure, let's do an exercise.
What do you do nowadays? You buy books from...
Yeah, because you buy everything with these devices. Yeah. You don't have to have a computer, really.
No.
I mean, so that only proves the point that some things are just too early, right? The other day, there was this post about Yahoo Pipes. I don't know if you guys know about it. It's like really from the 90s. Imagine Flow in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like it was really so much ahead of its time. Like you could have RSS feed and then split and combine and do this and you could tie into a number of services on internet in UI. You could tie them together, do kind of ETL on that, and it died. While nowadays, like it was just too early. Like the internet was not there yet.
That's always the it's not the time to market, it's time to, what is it, time to land the...
Well, the market time.
Yeah, but it's not really time to market, that's but anyway, well, it's more on the fact that if the timing is bad,
even if it's
not a old product, it might be wrong. Xerox with the UX-based operating systems, Apple, whatever, iPhone, everything.
And don't forget marketing, of course. That's of also course. A key role
absolutely.
Here.
Yeah, absolutely.
We probably know all the videos, which we kind of moved away already from, but VHS and Video 2000, those were the two big competitors of that.
Yeah.
And VHS just survived it, and V2000 just got completely killed. But probably marketing was a key role in that one.
True, yeah. and it wasn't about technology again.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now we're going really late on that thing. I think we need to move into the articles. So let's have a quick look on the articles, and let's get back on the chatting on things. And let me share my screen.
Don't you have a bot? Hey, bring up my screen. No, the other screen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I only have a one screen this time. So
yeah.
Good. You can see my screen.
Yes, works perfectly.
Oh, the recording bot, by the way, and hopefully the recording bot can actually see the screen as well.
The recording bot, can you see my screen? Yes, I can.
It has happened that it hasn't actually, but anyway, on next Saturday, there's a SharePoint Saturday Oslo coming up, and we have Jeff Deeper and Omar Shaheen over there. So basically what happens, last weekend there was a SharePoint Saturday Munich. And then there was the European SharePoint Conference this week, and actually Jeff and Omar, I know that the guys are heading to Oslo already, but not by the end of the ESPC, slightly earlier. I think they're leaving already on Tuesday from Praha to work within the Microsoft Search people in Oslo. And then obviously they will do the SharePoint Saturday Oslo there. So it will be pretty cool to get to Jeff Deeper on the SharePoint Saturday. So really, really cool. A few blog posts from Microsoft side of the house. So this one was from the Craft people. So Microsoft Craft developer blog, upcoming API changes to return limited information from inaccessible member resources. Waldeck, you had a good clarification on what does this actually mean.
Yeah, so imagine that you have an application. The application has requested access to some things, but it doesn't have access to everything. So in the past, if you would call an endpoint, that call, because you cannot access everything that the call would return, you would get a 403 unauthorized, or 403 forbidden. Now with this change in effect, you will get some data back, but not all of it. So the call will pass, will come through, and will get back, but only with the data that your app is allowed to access. And that's tricky part, because you cannot assume that the data is there, because you might get, even though the object says you will have property 1, 2, and 3, it could be that your call will only get property 1 and 2 will be null or empty or gone.
So if you were to think this in a way that it's me and you have an application where you keep permissions for, let's say, messages, but not for the calendar, and then you would ask messages and calendar, you would only get the messages which you have permissions, but the other.
Exactly. There will be no error telling you that you're missing something, or you need to authorize, you need to get additional permissions. So you will just get object that is half empty.
So there is a step forward from that perspective, because you're now getting not the forbidden anymore, but there's also a downside to it, because you basically have no clue at this point, if I'm right, that whether that data is not accessible or whether the data is not there. That's the biggest thing here, if I'm.
Yeah. Exactly, right? Because you cannot distinguish really easily whether the data, as you said, is missing server side, or you just are not allowed to access that. So you will need to check like the access token that you get, whether it contains the right scopes, and if it doesn't, then ask for dynamic consent of these additional permits, and so forth. So there's additional load for developers of applications to take that scenario into account, as opposed to 403, okay, no permissions or not enough permissions. You need to do that, which is clear.
Which basically implies that please, everybody give feedback on these changes as well. And then we'll probably Microsoft and the Craft team will come up with a reference samples on how to deal with these situations, because that's the way we can help the community then to adapt and the right ways of accessing the data. So
exactly.
Good. On other Microsoft-driven messages, this came up on Friday. I pushed it out actually on the SharePoint blog because whatever reasons the season releases has fallen on my table. Well, I've been doing this now for 4 years or something, pretty much every single month. This one is relatively small release, a subset of properties and methods. Nothing too traumatic. These are most likely mainly because something out of the box needs the access on these properties, and then we expose them in CSAM as well. Now, when they're exposed in CSAM, they are allowed to be called by the third party as well. And as an example, the Prams client browser, SharePoint client browser, is, I always forget about what's the right name, SharePoint client browser is using CSAM to actually crawl down on the objects and getting access on things.
So that's an interesting point. So just because there is a property available in CSOM, does it mean it's supported?
CSAM, yes. CSAM is officially supported API to be get called. Now, is it actually is it already enabled or not? That's the sentence.
Yeah. But I mean, so there isn't I ask for that because, like, you also see that in REST, there are new endpoints being available in REST, right. But just because they are there doesn't mean they're supported. So this is not the same between CSAM and REST.
CSAM is explicitly released client-side object model API for you to use. We can't really block that not to be supported because, hey, we shipped it for you. It's CSAM.
Well, but I mean, it's the same thing with REST. It's available API, but...
Sure, but if it's not documented, it's not documented. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Keep things clear, CSAM is always supported, REST if documented.
Yes. Okay. That's by definition. And then somebody's already thinking this, when is the CSAM.NET standard version coming out? And currently it is for next quarter scheduled, and I can't promise that either. It's been unfortunately delayed due to miscellaneous reasons, which I don't want to go into it right now.
It's not
Messenger. Sorry?
Next article.
Move on. SharePoint Client Browser. What would be the right blog post this has exactly the picture which I was wanted it to have. So good job, Prem.
Yeah, you're welcome. Actually, I want to have it differently, but it needs to be a moving.
Yeah, it would be nice to have a GIF. But basically, what it does, this is the Prem has been doing this for how many years?
The interesting bit is. Well, basically, since the start of the client-side object model, that got introduced in 2010, SharePoint 2010.
Yeah.
And I was back in the days, I was on a consulting job, and I need some information from structure, and I just opened up a console application and started messing around with client-side object model because I didn't have access to the server. And then the next assignment, basically, I needed some more information, and then the console application wasn't enough anymore. And we had the examples of back in the days, it was called, if I'm right, SharePoint Manager.
Yeah.
That's basically the similar concept, but then based on the server-side object model.
Yeah.
And I just, started working on that one, and that just evolved, and I have no clue how many hours went into this one. And I don't know.
Yeah.
But right now I think it's more about with me keeping up with the release of client-side object model. So the November release is next on the list. And I know MFA needs to be in there. So I know you guys, I've heard you loud of kind of a time thing at this moment, with a bit of a challenge to get it in there.
Also, I will put you here a little bit on a spot. Any plans to open source it? Because that might help you get others to help you with other things that you don't get to do yourself.
Yeah.
So don't tell anybody.
Okay. Okay.
But I haven't actually used Git before. So there's a bit of a learning curve for me to get it into a Git repository. Basically, I'm used to Visual Studio. Like I said, when we started out with the call, I evolved from developer into the solution architect, and I'm doing basically less and less coding. The impact is that I've also with SharePoint Framework is I'm just not so hands-on from that perspective. Mm-hmm. I definitely want to get there. I think we've talked about it for maybe already 2 years ago to potentially also get it into the PMP community from that perspective, because I think that should actually be the place since there are also a lot of open source tools in there.
Yeah.
So I agree, because that would definitely help out. Something like MFA, that would help out to get it open sourced.
Yeah,
absolutely. Cool. Easiest way to then others to contribute, definitely.
Yeah.
And this is so useful tooling. This is absolutely brilliant. Just another example. Sure, I have access on source code and server-side code and everything else, but when the multilingual modern pages came out, we were trying to figure out how was it actually implemented because I'm not part of the feature crew. Mm. The fastest way for me to actually sort of figure it out was to open this one and have a look on the structures and the insides of the fields and everything else. But then you're like, oh, that's how it's actually done. And then you go to the source code and start looking on the right pieces. So
can I quote you on that one?
Absolutely.
We'll put that in the next edition.
You know, but it's so easy because then you can actually go to the individual fields of a modern page and have a look on how does this constructed, what about property bags and all of that stuff. And it is a brilliant tool, absolutely. So highly recommended for anybody to use. And it has multiple versions. So it has a version for SharePoint Online 2019, 2016, 2013, and 2010. So
yeah.
obviously with given to see some limitations on the specific API version. So
yeah, and luckily the on-premises clients and object models don't iterate so quickly. So it's okay for me to keep up with all the versions.
Good. Let's go to the other articles as well. This one was interesting from Mark Anderson, not explicitly a dev topic, but also just a reminder for anybody how we can figure out and checking the Microsoft 365 service health. So how we are reporting and where we are reporting these issues. So good kind of a recap from Mark related on, is it down or not? Is it up and running? Is something known? Typically, to be fair, even as a Microsoft employee, I can say this openly, that it's the same with any other cloud services, and that the service might be down, but it's not yet visible in the health page. But everybody is looking on working on making it more automatic, more instant from a status perspective. I think we've seen those, what was it? There was a one cloud provider, I'm not going to name anybody because that feels unfair, but there was a one cloud provider which health page was down because the underlying system was down. So basically, their health base was relied on the technology which was down. So
that's an interesting thing, right? To monitor the system, you monitor with the monitoring tool and that.
Good, but good summary on those things. Now on Wartman, this came out actually earlier today, and this is really around the SharePoint web part and the property domain lifecycle, so how things are firing and how they're working and what are the different properties and settings. So, and what's the difference between the non-reactive and reactive mode? Not about the React framework, but the reactive as in the panel setting, right?
Yes.
And reactive in the panel setting means that you need to click apply or not. That's what it means.
Yes.
How many reactive was that?
reactive, yes. Moving further from SharePoint Static Kit, part one, further overview. So this is from Dimitri Rogesh. This is really around the fact that we have a quite nice looking, actually, enterprise footer with a user profile, personalization. In the starter kit, and how would you take that as an individual component and adapt that to your own portals. It is an expanding footer as well. And this really walks through the process of getting started on things. And there's even a nice GIF animation on how made things happen, actually. So now we are working, we already started a effort with 10 MVPs already, where we are actually rebuilding the starter kits, and all of these solutions will be individually as a SPPKG files. So you can, in the future, whenever the starter kit V2 is coming out, you can install the starter kit, or you can install then an individual component out of starter kit and just
nice.
Enable that.
Yeah.
So.
How is it picking up the provisioning engine from the perspective?
Well, that's a separate thing. The lookbook thing, I guess. Quickly, so lookbook microsoft.com. Which is now has the integrated provisioning experience. This is picking up really well. So people are really finding it highly useful. Though obviously the downside of the lookbook currently still is that it requires an administrative permissions to grant the permissions to use that.
Yeah.
And that's really a pity, because technically these cool looking designs which we have here available for anybody to take advantage. They are actually content in a site collection level.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't, by an assumption, they wouldn't require tenant admin permissions. But there are certain underlying API implications which we need to fix in a product group. So potentially we are able to offer this in the future for non-tenant admins as well.
Yeah.
Because that's then really, really useful. But already today, you can spin up a trial tenant or a Office Dev program tenant, and then you'll be the tenant admin there. So usage went skyrocketing after the Ignite announcement. So,
yeah.
So that'll be an interesting thing, right? What if what would it be possible to distribute these as, let's say, a one or a click once app, and then using CSOM users identity deploy it to the specific site for which you then wouldn't need the admin approval?
Yes. So right now they have a dependency on tenant admin API, because there's an APIs in the web level or a site level which actually require tenant admin permissions, which they shouldn't, but they do, and that's blocking them to be a non-tenant admin template. But having them as a end user one, let's say, clickable, installable solutions, we're missing that tech. That's really the downside. Well, technically, we could have the tech which would be CISO.
Yeah, exactly.
But that requires that the underlying APIs again be ending at admin permissions.
Yeah.
Then you would have could have a simple EXE. When you double click that one, it actually asks you to sign in, asks you to which is the site collection where you want to install this, and then
that's it.
Whenever the conference season is done after next week, then we'll get back on polishing this stuff. So it's been a pretty long autumn again. Now, where was it? Here we are. From Matti Balkonen, update SharePoint navigation after site rename. This is related on fixing links if you do a site rename and a site URL, a PowerShell, or see some PowerShell, actually, PowerShell. So fixing those things from Matti. So nice to see also that people are sharing their own scripts for others to take advantage because it reduces then everybody's time. This one is from Akash. Create Q&I chatbot using Microsoft Azure Q&I Maker, SharePoint, and Power Automate. Nice summary on how to make these things happen and how do you create stuff, how do you get started on things one step at a time. And these are, I would say these are highly useful always on learning the new technologies or learning the ways of let's say, going through the step-by-step guidance on, oh, okay, this is how it works, and then start expanding. Obviously, Microsoft should provide this kind of summaries though, as well.
And really appreciate from the writer that he put in so much effort to get this blog in place, because the amount of screenshots and the amount of details it looks like, I haven't read it myself, but it's, I do know that from blogging, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
So, some kudos to that.
Absolutely. This one, create GitHub actions for SharePoint framework solutions. So from Anoop from Content and Code, basically let's use GitHub actions for SharePoint framework solution automation, ALM, and all of that stuff. So taking advantage of that if you're storing your stuff in GitHub rather than in VS Online. So really nice setup as well. Here from Russell Go. Generating Word or PDF document using the data in the multiple SharePoint list using Azure Functions. If I remember, there's a lot of information and code here. Not quite super optimal, let's say, from a formatting perspective, but that's also a problem also always from a blocking platform. But a lot of effort here explaining how to make those things happen and then transforming an existing page and pages or lists and information to a PDF format. So a lot of one step at a time.
Yeah. PowerShell is even there. There you go.
A lot of stuff there. Now, two more articles. How to integrate webcam with SPFX and store captured images in SharePoint document library. So this is from Madhar Tural. We did have a live community demo on this one, actually in the previous SPFX community call. It's on the similar topic on using the React webcam NPM package, which will then give you the capabilities basically on interacting with the camera. So pretty cool setup. And I think, not sure if this one is referencing the other code example, but let's make sure that our blog posts are doing that. So. Seems to be this one of those things where people seem to like the fact that you can take camera pictures, but then what's the use case?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know of one. Every single time you're going to the US, TSA officers, they have a webcam and they're taking your picture with a webcam.
So we should sell SPFX for TSA.
This solution, yes, probably.
Yes. Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, seriously, like that, there's your scenario.
Yeah.
And probably there are many companies that create a badge making a picture with a webcam.
True. That is true. That's a good point, actually. That is a really good point. Now, sure, there's absolutely scenarios over there. The last type, by the way, was the lookbook side here. Nothing super special here. We talked about this one quite a few times. So one thing maybe to note here, there's actually quite a lot of additional templates. People tend to use absolutely two templates, the landing and the perspective. Let me actually get in here, back in the templates. There is more than 15 templates available, so don't miss them. This is a tab control. Defined by our design team. So there's additional designs and designs of functionalities like the
Microsoft Learning Pathways available in here as well. So, but we seem to be, based on statistics, people are
just,
they're coming in here. And to be fair, they are the most actually awesome looking template, which is the landing and the perspective, which are kind of designed to be the root side of your tenant. Yeah. So that's why they are being used the most.
I was wondering whether the depth control, which you just picked, whether that actually blocks people from finding the other templates.
That could be the case. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe it's a wrong design.
Also, it would be an interesting thing to change the order of the tabs and then see over the course of a week or two whether that has any effect on the applied templates or not. An easy test.
Yeah, fair point. We could do a quick test on that one, absolutely. But there are quite a lot of different other designs available, just to pinpoint that as well. So. Good. I think that's it for the articles. And we've gone quite long again on the timings, which I'm not surprised.
Oh.
Magically, this happens every single week.
I mean, there's just so much. And we even didn't get to talking about boats and sails.
That is true.
We should have, actually.
So you have a boat?
Well, not anymore, sadly. But yeah, I've been really...
Yeah.
We had a boat with basically with four friends.
Okay.
And it was an X yacht. What people might know sailing yachts from perspective, X79. It's an 8 meter boat.
Yeah.
Built for racing. It's really close, so it's low, so close with by the water. So once you get on there, you really feel the boat and the waves and the wind, and it has way too much sail. Basically, it's more sail than it should actually have. So yeah. It was quite a ride.
Yeah.
I've been in Copenhagen or actually Denmark with it from the Netherlands. I'm based in the Netherlands, so I've been in Denmark. And we went over the canal to England.
Cool.
And actually were in front of the tower. So that was really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So you can actually freely go to Thames River and nobody cares. It's just...
Well, you should care at that point. Because, there's a lot of basically the water is moving, so the tide is a really crucial thing from that perspective. So you want to plan it properly, because once
IT projects, so we're tying this back on
the general consent, I guess, with IT projects is not so really good, it's positive. So I'll explain you what the risk is, which comes down to is that if the tide turns around and you're trying to get to London, you're basically being pushed out of the canal back to the North Sea. And that goes with so many, that goes so hard and so quickly that you'll probably be surprised and it gets a hazardous situation.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So how much is the water going up and down as well?
I don't know exactly, but I do know that there's poles you can use to kind of secure your boat.
Yeah.
But the water will definitely go past your boat in high speed at that point. Yeah. So then you actually see how much, how strong nature is that it can surprise you. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And that's just the themes. So crossing the canal and similarly going out to the open sea, that comes with risks as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got a beautiful story about that, but I don't know whether you want to have that in the show.
Right, so which is a very, very smoothly done way for us to get you back on the show.
Yeah.
I have beautiful stories, but that's for another time.
Well, this week, what are your sessions on the ESPC? What are you talking in Prague?
Yeah, so I'm doing two sessions. One is about information protection. So there's a lot of exciting news coming from Ignite, last Ignite, around the information protection bits and pieces. So the key thing here, what I'm talking about, is sensitivity labels in the unified labeling approach, which has to do
with Microsoft 365.
So the key thing is, I'm going to talk about the labels, how you set it up, how it's hooked up with conditional access, how you have your conditional access in place. And the second topic is about Power Apps, which is actually an in-depth level 4 home session. Which is about how do you make a connection with some connectors with an API, but the actual API is hosted in a different tenant than the tenant where you're consuming it from, and then you get into some challenges with authorization and stuff like that.
Cool.
So it's a bit of a really specific session, so I'm curious how many people will turn up, but if you're kind of stuck in that the subject, then I would definitely recommend you joining me.
Yeah.
So and besides that, ask the experts and
yeah,
I'll be around. So
and those are Thursday.
Information is tomorrow, Tuesday.
On which time? Let's see if the recording is out.
That's cool. What time is it? I should actually check that one. Let me check it. No, it's somewhere in the afternoon. Yeah. And the second session is on Wednesday. That's the Power Up session,
yeah,
which is late afternoon, I do know. So I kind of book or schedule my day on the day itself. So yeah. I don't know the time. So. Yeah.
Makes perfect sense. What about you, Malek? What are you doing this week?
I will be building stuff. That doesn't happen too often, but I'm actually building stuff. I'm building some new things, so
cool.
It's good. yes, yes. Yeah, I guess at that point I'm sharing only that. So more is to come, but
Cool. For me, it's basically obviously Friday is the National Day of Independence Day in Finland. So Friday is off. So I'm flying home for Thursday. That's it. Pretty cool.
So luckily, the conference is ending on Thursday.
Yeah, correct. And just by luck, So it would have been a difficult thing to explain that for our wife. And on Thursday, we have a pretty nice keynote on Thursday morning, right after the attendee party, which is on Wednesday. So hopefully, we'll get people there. Yeah. But it's me, Mike Amelan, who's the director of Office Dev, or Microsoft 365 developer, Jeremy Fake, and Paolo Bialorossi, and Laura Cook in the same keynote.
Gee, that's so a lot of people.
Five demos and five people. So it should be fun. It's the kind of this. We'll invite always one person to do the demos, and we'll chit chat and all of that. So like we've done in the past in the ESPC as well. So it should be good.
Cool.
But I think that's it for now. So thank you, Wanda. Thank you, Pram, for joining. And we'll get, we'll do another one in a week.
Somewhere.
With somebody, I don't know who. But I think that's it for now. Yeah. So thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And depending on which formats you're actually using, please give us feedback, right? And if you write your own articles, what was the hashtag? Hashtag is Wanda.
SPDev Weekly.
There we go.
Surprise. It's like, ooh.
Yeah, I was just testing it.
Of course.
You should put a sticker on your somewhere
on my head. On my head.
Just in the back, actually. So hashtag SPDevWeekly, yeah.
I mean, we can put it. We can have. I mean, it is video. Well, so for the video, we can make an overlay. For the audio, that wouldn't help.
That's true.
Yeah.
It might have been there.
Might be.
You cannot see that at this point, but it might be there.
All of a sudden, something like pow, and there it is.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with the old-fashioned sticker then?
Nothing. Somebody needs to still create them and then divide them. And
you need to put them on the closet.
Clean them, align them.
Yeah,
not too much work.
Yeah. If you do all of that virtually, you don't have to worry about a thing. And it's cheap. So thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. You need to watch this other video, otherwise it doesn't make any sense. Well, thank you. We'll be back in a week.
See you next week. Thank you.